ever said pissing in my presence?" Her freckled face went somber. "Those pissing contests are how lords judge one another's strength, and woe to any man who shows his weakness. A woman must needs piss twice as hard if she hopes to rule. And if that woman should happen to be small..." "Lord Stackhouse covets my Horseshoe Hills. Sir Clifford Conklin has an old claim to Leafy Lake. Those dismal Durwells live by stealing cattle. And beneath mine own roof I have the Long Inch. Every day I wake wondering if this might be the day he marries me by force." Her hand curled tight around her braid, as hard as if it were a rope, and she was dangling over a precipice. "He wants to, I know. He holds back for fear of my wrath, just as Conkling and Stackhouse and the Durwells tread carefully where the Red Widow is concerned. If any of them thought for a moment that I had turned weak and soft..." Dunk put the ring back on his finger and drew his dagger. The widow's eyes went wide at the sight of naked steel. "What are you doing?" she said. "Have you lost your wits? There are a dozen crossbows trained on you."
"You wanted blood for blood?"
He laid the dagger against his cheek. "They told you wrong. It wasn't Bennis cut that digger. It was me." He pressed the edge of the steel into his face, slashed downward. When he shook the blood off the blade, some spattered on her face. More freckles, he thought.
"There, the Red Widow has her due. A cheek for a cheek."
"You are quite mad." The smoke had filled her eyes with tears. "If you were better born, I'd marry you."
"Aye, my lady. And if pigs had wings and scales and breathed flame, they'd be as good as dragons."
Dunk slid the knife back in its sheath. His face had begun to throb. The blood ran down his cheek and dripped onto his gorget. The smell made thunder snort and pour the water. "Give me the men who burned the wood."
"No one burned the wood," she said. "But if some man of mine had done so, it must have been to please me. How could I give such a man to you?"
She glanced back at her escort.
"It would be best if Sir Eustace were just to withdraw his accusation."
"Those pigs will be breathing fire first, m'lady."
"In that case, I must assert my innocence before the eyes of gods and men. Tell Sir Eustace that I demand an apology or a trial. The choice is his."
She wheeled her horse about to ride back to her men. The stream would be their battleground. Septon Sefton waddled out and said a prayer, beseeching the Father above to look down on these two men and judge them justly, asking the warrior to lend his strength to the man whose cause was just and true, begging the mother's mercy for the liar, that he might be forgiven for his sins. When the praying was over and done with, he turned to Sir Eustace Osgray one last time.
"Sir," he said, "I beg you once again, withdraw your accusation."
"I will not," the old man said, his moustache trembling. The fat septon turned to Lady Rohan.
"Good sister, if you did this thing, confess your guilt and offer good Sir Eustace some restitution for his wood. Elsewise blood must flow."
"My champion will prove my innocence before the eyes of gods and men."
"Trial by battle is not the only way,"
said the septon, waist-deep in the water.
"Let us go to Golden Grove, I implore you both, and place the matter before Lord Bowen for his judgment."
"Never,"
said Sir Eustace. The Red Widow shook her head. Sir Lucas Inchfield looked at Lady Rohan, his face dark with fury.
"You will marry me when this moment's farce is done, as your Lord Father wished."
"My Lord Father never knew you as I do," she gave back.
Dunk went to one knee beside Egg and put the signet back in the boy's hand. 4 three-headed dragons, 2 and 2, the arms of Makar, Prince of Summerhall. "Back in the boot," he said, "but if it happens that I die, go to the nearest of your father's friends and have him take you back to Summerhall. Don't try to cross the whole reach on your own. I see you don't forget, or my ghost will come and clout you in the ear."
"Yes, sir," said Egg, "but I'd sooner you didn't die."
"It's too hot to die."
Dunk donned his helm, and Egg helped him fasten it tightly to his gorget. The blood was sticky on his face, though Sir Eustace had torn a piece off his cloak to help stop the gash from bleeding. He rose and went to Thunder. Most of the smoke had blown away, he saw, as he swung up onto the saddle,
but the sky was still dark. Clouds, he thought. Dark clouds. It had been so long. Maybe it's an omen. But is it his omen or mine? Dunk was no good with omens. Across the stream, Sir Lucas had mounted up as well. His horse was a chestnut courser, a splendid animal, swift and strong, but not as large as Thunder. What the horse lacked in size, he made up for in armour, though. He was clad in crinet, chanfron, and a coat of light chain. The Longinch himself wore black enamelled plate and silvery ringmail. An onyx spider squatted malignantly atop his helmet, but his shield displayed his own arms. A bend sinister, checky black and white, on a pale grey field. Dunk watched Sir Lucas hand it to a squire. He does not mean to use it. When another squire delivered him a pole axe, he knew why. The axe was long and lethal, with a banded haft, a heavy head, and a wicked spike on its back. But it was a two-handed weapon. The Longinch would need to trust in his armour to protect him. I need to make him rue that choice. His own shield was on his left arm, the shield Tanzel had painted with his elm and falling star. The old shield rhyme echoed in his head. Oak and iron guard me well, or else I'm dead and doomed to hell. He slid his longsword from its scabbard. The weight of it felt good in his hand. He put his heels into Thunder's flanks and walked the big destrier down into the water. Across the stream, Sir Lucas did the same. Dunk pressed right, so as to present the Longinch with his left side, protected by his shield. That was not something Sir Lucas was willing to concede him. He turned his courser quickly, and they came together in a tumult of grey steel and green spray. Sir Lucas struck with his poleaxe. Dunk had to twist in the saddle to catch it on his shield. The force of it shot down his arm and jarred his teeth together. He swung his sword in answer, a sideways cut that took the other knight beneath his upraised arm. Steel screamed on steel, and it was on. The Longinch spurred his courser in a circle, trying to get around to Dunk's unprotected side, but Thunder wheeled to meet him, snapping at the other horse. Sir Lucas delivered one crashing blow after another, standing in his stirrups to get all his weight and strength behind the axe head. Dunk shifted his shield to catch each blow as it came. Half crouched beneath its oak, he hacked at Inchfield's arms and side and legs, but his plate turned every stroke. Round they went, and round again, the water lapping at their legs. The Longinch attacked, and Dunk defended, watching for a weakness. Finally, he saw it. Every time Sir Lucas lifted his axe for another blow, a gap appeared beneath his arm. There was mail and leather there, and padding underneath, but no steel plate. Dunk kept his shield up, trying to time his attack. Soon, the axe crashed down, wrenched free, came up. Now! He slammed his spurs into Thunder, driving him closer, and thrust with his longsword to drive his point through the opening. But the gap vanished as quick as it had appeared. His sword point scraped a rondel, and Dunk, overextended, almost lost his seat. The axe descended with a crash, slanting off the iron rim of Dunk's shield, crunching against the side of his helm, and striking Thunder a glancing blow along the neck. The destrier screamed and reared up on two legs, his eye rolling white in pain as the sharp, coppery smell of blood filled the air. He lashed out with his iron hooves, just as Longinch was moving in. One caught Sir Lucas in the face, the other on his shoulder. Then the heavy warhorse came down atop his courser. It all happened in a heartbeat. The two horses went down in a tangle, kicking and biting at each other, churning up the water and the mud below. Dunk tried to throw himself from the saddle, but one foot tangled in a stirrup. He fell face first, sucking down one desperate gulp of air before the stream came rushing into the helm through the eye slit. His foot was still caught up, and he felt a savage yank as Thunder's struggles almost pulled his leg out of its socket. Just as quickly he was free, turning, sinking. For a moment he flailed helplessly in the water. The world was blue and green and brown. The weight of his armor pulled him down until his shoulder bumped the stream bed. If that is down, the other way is up. Dunk's steel-clad hands fumbled at the stones and sands, and somehow he gathered his legs up under him and stood. He was reeling, dripping mud, with water pouring from the breath holes in his dinted helm, but he was standing. He sucked down air. His battered shield still clung to his left arm, but his scabbard was empty and his sword was gone. There was blood inside his helm as well as water. When he tried to shift his weight, his ankle sent a lance of pain right up his leg. Both horses had struggled back to their feet, he saw. He turned his head, squinting one-eyed through a veil of blood, searching for his foe. gone, he thought. He's drowned, or thunder crushed his skull in.
Sir Lucas burst up out of the water, right in front of him, sword in hand. He struck Dunk's neck a savage blow, and only the thickness of his gorget kept his head upon his shoulders. He had no blade to answer with, only his shield. He gave ground, and a long inch came after, screaming and slashing. Dunk's upraised arm took a numbing blow above the elbow. A cut to his hip made him grunt in pain. As he backed away, a rock turned beneath his foot, and he went down to one knee, chest high in the water. He got his shield up, but this time Sir Lucas struck so hard he split the thick oak right down the middle and drove the remnants back into Dunk's face. His ears were ringing, and his mouth was full of blood, but somewhere far away he heard Egg screaming,
"Get him, sir! Get him! Get him! He's right there!"
Dunk dove forward. Sir Lucas had wrenched his sword free for another cut. He slammed into him waist high and knocked him off his feet. The stream swallowed both of them again, but this time Dunk was ready. He kept one arm around the long inch and forced him to the bottom. Bubbles came streaming out from behind Inchfield's battered, twisted visor, but still he fought. He found a rock at the bottom of the stream and began hammering at Dunk's head and hands. Dunk fumbled at his sword belt. "Have I lost a dagger too?" he wondered. No, there it was. His hand closed round the hilt, and he wrenched it free and drove it slowly through the churning water, through the iron rings and boiled leather beneath the arm of Lucas the Longinch, turning it as he pushed. Sir Lucas jerked and twisted, and the strength left him. Dunk shoved away and floated. His chest was on fire. A fish flashed past his face, long and white and slender. "What's that?" he wondered. "What's that? What's that?" He woke in the wrong castle. When his eyes opened, he did not know where he was. It was blessedly cool. The taste of blood was in his mouth, and he had a cloth across his eyes, a heavy cloth, fragrant with some unguent. It smelled of cloves, he thought. Dunk groped at his face, pulled the cloth away. Above him, torchlight played against a high ceiling. Ravens were walking on the rafters overhead, peering down with small black eyes and quawking at him. "Well, I'm not blind, at least." He was in a maester's tower. The walls were lined with racks of herbs and potions in earthen jars and vessels of green glass. A long trestle table nearby was covered with parchments, books, and queer bronze instruments, all spattered with droppings from the ravens in the rafters. He could hear them muttering at one another. He tried to sit. It proved a bad mistake. His head swam, and his left leg screamed in agony when he put the slightest weight upon it. His ankle was wrapped in linen, he saw, and there were linen strips around his chest and shoulders, too.
"Be still!"
A face appeared above him, young and pinched, with dark brown eyes on either side of a hooked nose. Dunk knew that face. The man who owned it was all in grey, with a chain collar hanging loose about his neck. A maester's chain of many metals. Dunk grabbed him by the wrist.
"Where?" "Coldmort," said the maester. "You were too badly injured to return to Stamfast, so Lady Rohan commanded us to bring you here. Drink this."
He raised a cup of something to Dunk's lips. The potion had a bitter taste like vinegar, but at least it washed away the taste of blood. Dunk made himself drink it all. Afterward, he flexed the fingers of his sword hand, and then the other. "At least my hands still work, and my arms."
What did I hurt?"
"What not?" the maester snorted. "A broken ankle? A sprained knee? A broken collarbone? Bruising? Your upper torso is largely green and yellow, and your right arm is a purply black. I thought your skull was cracked as well, but it appears not. There is that gash in your face, sir. You will have a scar, I fear. Oh, and you had drowned by the time we pulled you from the water."
"Drowned?" said Dunk.
"I never suspected that one man could swallow so much water, not even a man as large as you, sir. Count yourself fortunate that I am iron-born. The priests of the drowned god know how to drown a man and bring him back, and I have made a study of their beliefs and customs."
"I drowned?" Dunk tried to sit again, but the strength was not in him. "I drowned in water that did not even come up to my neck." He laughed, then groaned in pain.
"Sir Lucas?" "Dead,
Did you doubt it?
No. Dunk doubted many things, but not that. He remembered how the strength had gone out of the Long Inch's limbs all at once.
Egg, he got out. I want egg.
Hunger is a good sign, the maester said, but it is sleep you need just now, not food.
Dunk shook his head and regretted it at once.
Egg is my squire.
Is he? A brave lad, yeah, and stronger than he looks. He was the one to pull you from the stream. He helped us get that armour off you, too, and rode with you in the wain when we brought you here. He would not sleep himself, but sat by your side with your sword across his lap, in case someone tried to do you harm. He even suspected me, and insisted that I taste anything I meant to feed you. A queer child, but devoted.
Where is he?
Sir Eustace asked the boy to attend him at the wedding feast, and there was no one else on his side. It would have been discourteous for him to refuse.
Wedding feast? Dunk did not understand.
Oh, you would not know, of course. Coldmoat and Standfast were reconciled after your battle. Lady Rohan begged leave of old Sir Eustace to cross his land and visit Adam's grave, and he granted her that right. She knelt before the blackberries and began to weep, and he was so moved that he went to comfort her. They spent the whole night talking of young Adam and my lady's noble father. Lord Wyman and Sir Eustace were fast friends until the Blackfyre Rebellion. His lordship and my lady were wed this morning by our good Septim Sefton. Eustace Osgray is the Lord of Coldmoat, and his checky lion flies beside the Webber Spider on every tower and wall.
Dunk's world was spinning slowly all around him. That potion. He's put me back to sleep. He closed his eyes and let all the pain drain out of him. He could hear the ravens quawking and screaming at each other, and the sound of his own breath, and something else as well. A softer sound, steady, heavy, somehow soothing.
"What's that?"
he murmured sleepily.
"That sound."
"That?"
the maester listened.
"That's just rain."
He did not see her till the day they took their leave.
"This is folly, sir!"
Septon Sefton complained as Dunk limped heavily across the yard, swinging his splintered foot and leaning on a crutch.
"Maester Serac says you are not half healed as yet, and this rain! You will like to catch a chill if you do not drown again. At least wait for the rain to stop."
"That may be years."
Dunk was grateful to the fat Septon, who had visited him near every day, to pray for him ostensibly, though more time seemed to be taken up with tales and gossip. He would miss his loose and lively tongue and cheerful company, but that changed nothing. "I need to go." The rain was lashing down around them, a thousand cold grey whips upon his back. His cloak was already sodden. It was the white wool cloak Sir Eustace had given him, with the green and gold checkered border. The old knight had pressed it on him once again as a parting gift.
"For your courage and leal service, sir," he said.
The brooch that pinned the cloak at his shoulder was a gift as well, an ivory spider brooch with silver legs. Clusters of crushed garnets made spots upon its back.
"I hope this is not some mad quest to hunt down Bennis," Septon Sefton said. "You are so bruised and battered that I would fear for you if that one found you in such a state."
Bennis, Dunk thought bitterly. Bloody Bennis.
While Dunk had been making his stand at the stream, Bennis had tied up Sam Stoops and his wife, ransacked Standfast from top to bottom, and made off with every item of value he could find, from candles, clothes, and weaponry, to Osgray's old silver cup, and a small cache of coins the old man had hidden in his solar behind a mildewed tapestry. One day Dunk hoped to meet Sir Bennis of the Brown Shield again, and when he did...
"Bennis will keep."
"Where will you go?"
The Septon was panting heavily. Even with Dunk on a crutch, he was too fat to match his pace.
"Farewell, Harrenhal, the Trident. There are hedges everywhere."
He shrugged.
"I've always wanted to see the wall."
"The wall?"
The Septon jerked to a stop.
"I despair of you, Sir Duncan,"
he shouted, standing in the mud with outspread hands as the rain came down around him.
"Pray, sir, pray for the crone to light your way."
Dunk kept walking. She was waiting for him inside the stables, standing by the yellow bales of hay in a gown as green as summer.
"Sir Duncan," she said when he came pushing through the door.
Her red braid hung down in front, the end of it brushing against her thighs.
It is good to see you on your feet.
You never saw me on my back, he thought.
M'lady, what brings you to the stables? It's a wet day for a ride.
I might say the same to you.
Egg told you.
I owe him another clout in the ear.
I'd be glad he did,
or I would have sent men after you to drag you back.
It was cruel of you to try to steal away without so much as a farewell.
She had never come to see him while he was in Maester Serric's care, not once. That green becomes you well, m'lady, he said. It brings out the colour of your eyes. He shifted his weight awkwardly on the crutch. I'm here for my horse.
You do not need to go. There is a place for you here when you're recovered. Captain of my guards, and Egg can join my other squires. No one need ever know who he is.
Thank you, m'lady, but no. Thunder was in a stall a dozen places down. Dunk hobbled toward him.
Please reconsider, sir. These are perilous times, even for dragons and their friends. Stay until you've healed.
She walked along beside him.
It would please Lord Eustace, too. He is very fond of you.
Very fond, Dunk agreed. If his daughter wasn't dead, he'd want me to marry her. Then you could be my lady mother. I never had a mother, much less a lady mother.
For half a heartbeat, Lady Rohan looked as though she was going to slap him again. Maybe she'll just kick my crutch away.
You are angry with me, sir, she said instead. You must let me make amends.
Well, he said, you could help me saddle Thunder.
I had something else in mind.
She reached out her hand for his, a freckled hand, her fingers strong and slender.
I'll bet she's freckled all over.
How well do you know horses?
I ride one.
An old destrier bred for battle, slow-footed and ill-tempered. Not a horse to ride from place to place.
If I need to get from place to place, it's him or these. Dunk pointed at his feet.
You have large feet, she observed. Large hands as well. I think you must be large all over. Too large for most palfreys.
They'd look like ponies with you perched upon their backs. Still, a swifter mount would serve you well. A big courser, with some Dornish sand steed for endurance.
She pointed to the stall across from Thunder's.
A horse like her.
She was a blood bay with a bright eye and a long, fiery mane. Lady Rohan took a carrot from her sleeve and stroked her head as she took it.
The carrot, not the fingers,
she told the horse, before she turned again to Dunk.
I call her Flame, but you may name her as you please. Call her Amends, if you like.
For a moment he was speechless. He leaned on the crutch and looked at the blood bay with new eyes. She was magnificent, a better mount than any the old man had ever owned. You had only to look at those long, clean limbs to see how swift she'd be.
I bred her for beauty and for speed.
He turned back to Thunder.
I cannot take her. Why not?
She is too good a horse for me. Just look at her.
A flush crept up Rohan's face. She clutched her braid, twisting it between her fingers.
I had to marry. You know that. My father's will... Oh, don't be such a fool.
Where else should I be? I'm thick as a castle wall and bastard-born as well.
Take the horse. I refuse to let you go without something to remember me by.
I will remember you, my lady. Have no fear of that.
Take her!
Dunk grabbed her braid and pulled her face to his. It was awkward with the crutch and the difference in their heights. He almost fell before he got his lips on hers. He kissed her hard. One of her hands went round his neck and one around his chest. He learned more about kissing in a moment than he had ever known from watching. But when they finally broke apart, he drew his dagger.
I know what I want to remember you by, m'lady.
Egg was waiting for him at the gatehouse, mounted on a handsome new sorrel palfrey and holding Maester's lead. When Dunk trotted up to them on Thunder, the boy looked surprised.
She said she wanted to give you a new horse, sir.
Even highborn ladies don't get all they want, Dunk said, as they rode out across the drawbridge. It wasn't a horse I wanted. The moat was so high it was threatening to overflow its banks. I took something else to remember her by instead. A lock of that red hair. He reached under his cloak, brought out the braid, and smiled.
In the iron cage at the crossroads, the corpses still embraced. They looked lonely, forlorn. Even the flies had abandoned them, and the crows as well. Only some scraps of skin and hair remained upon the dead men's bones. Dunk halted, frowning. His ankle was hurting from the ride, but it made no matter. Pain was as much a part of knighthood as were swords and shields. "Which way is south?" he asked Egg. It was hard to know when the world was all rain and mud and the sky was grey as a granite wall.
"That's south, sir," Egg pointed. "That's north."
"Summer Hall is south. Your father."
"The wall is north."
Dunk looked at him. "Well, that's a long way to ride."
"I have a new horse, sir."
"So you do." Dunk had to smile.
"And why would you want to see the wall?" "Well," said Egg, "I hear it's tall."
The Mystery Knight. A light summer rain was falling as Dunk and Egg took their leave of Stony Sept. Dunk rode his old warhorse, Thunder, with Egg beside him on the spirited young palfrey he'd named Rain, leading their mule, Maester. On Maester's back were bundled Dunk's armor and Egg's books, their bedrolls, tent and clothing, several slabs of hard salt beef, half a flagon of mead, and two skins of water. Egg's old straw hat, wide-brimmed and floppy, kept the rain off the mule's head. The boy had cut holes for Maester's ears. Egg's new straw hat was on his own head. Except for the ear holes, the two hats looked much the same to Dunk. As they neared the town gates, Egg reined up sharply. Up above the gateway, a traitor's head had been impaled upon an iron spike. It was fresh from the look of it, the flesh more pink than green, but the carrion crows had already gone to work on it. The dead man's lips and cheeks were torn and ragged. His eyes were two brown holes, weeping slow red tears as raindrops mingled with the crusted blood. The dead man's mouth sagged open, as if to harangue travellers passing through the gate below. Dunk had seen such sights before. "Back in King's Landing, when I was a boy, I stole a head right off its spike once," he told Egg. Actually, it had been Ferret who scampered up the wall to snatch the head, after Rafe and Pudding said he'd never dare. But when the guards came running, he'd tossed it down, and Dunk was the one who'd caught it. "Some rebel lord or robber knight, it was. Or maybe just a common murderer. A head's a head. They all look the same after a few days on a spike." He and his three friends had used the head to terrorize the girls of Flea Bottom. They'd chased them through the alleys and make them give the head a kiss before they'd let them go. That head got kissed a lot, as he recalled. There wasn't a girl in King's Landing who could run as fast as Rafe. Egg was better off not hearing that part, though. "Ferret, Rafe, and Pudding. Little monsters, those three. And me, the worst of all." His friends and he had kept the head until the flesh turned black and began to slough away. That took the fun out of chasing girls, so one night they burst into a pot shop and tossed what was left into the kettle. "The crows always go for the eyes," he told Egg. "Then the cheeks cave in. The flesh turns green." He squinted.
"Wait, I know that face." "You do, sir," said Egg. 3 days ago, the hunchback Septon we heard preaching against Lord Bloodraven."
He remembered then. He was a holy man sworn to the Seven, even if he did preach treason.
"His hands are scarlet with a brother's blood, and the blood of his young nephews, too,"
the hunchback had declared to the crowd that had gathered in the market square.
"A shadow came at his command to strangle Prince Valar's sons in their mother's womb. Where is our young prince now? Where is his brother, sweet Materis? Where is good King Darren gone, and fearless Balor Breakspear? The grave has claimed them, everyone, yet he endures. This pale bird with bloody beak who perches on King Aerys's shoulder and caws into his ear. The mark of hell is on his face and in his empty eye, and he has brought us drought and pestilence and murder. Rise up, I say, and remember our true king across the water. Seven gods there are, and seven kingdoms, and the black dragon sired seven sons. Rise up, my lords and ladies! Rise up, you brave knights and sturdy yeomen, and cast down, Blood Raven, that foul sorcerer, lest your children and your children's children be cursed forevermore!
Every word was treason. Even so, it was a shock to see him here, with holes where his eyes had been. That's him, aye, Dunk said. And another good reason to put this town behind us. He gave Thunder a touch of the spur, and he and Egg rode through the gates of Stony Sept, listening to the soft sound of the rain. How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? The riddle ran. 1,000 eyes, and one. Some claimed the king's hand was a student of the dark arts who could change his face, put on the likeness of a one-eyed dog, even turn into a mist. Packs of gaunt grey wolves hunted down his foes, men said, and carrion crows spied for him and whispered secrets in his ear. Most of the tales were only tales, Dunk did not doubt, but no one could doubt that Bloodraven had informers everywhere. He had seen the man once with his own two eyes, back in King's Landing. White as bone with his skin and hair of Brynden Rivers. And his eye, he only had the one, the other having been lost to his half-brother Bittersteel on the Redgrass field, was red as blood. On cheek and neck he bore the wine-stained birthmark that had given him his name. When the town was well behind them, Dunk cleared his throat and said, "Bad business, cut off the heads of septons. All he did was talk. Words are wind." "Some words are wind, sir. Some are treason." Egg was skinny as a stick, all ribs and elbows, but he did have a mouth. "Now you sound a proper princeling." Egg took that for an insult, which it was. "He might have been a septon, but he was preaching lies, sir. The drought wasn't Lord Bloodraven's fault, nor the great spring sickness either."
"Might be that so, but if we start cutting off the heads of all the fools and liars, half the towns in the Seven Kingdoms will be empty."
6 days later, the rain was just a memory. Dunk had stripped off his tunic to enjoy the warmth of sunlight on his skin. When a little breeze came up, cool and fresh and fragrant as a maiden's breath, he sighed. "Water," he announced. "You smell it? The lake can't be far now."
"All I can smell is Maester, sir. He stinks."
Egg gave the mule's lead a savage tug. Maester had stopped to crop at the grass beside the road, as he did from time to time. "There's an old inn by the lake shore. Dunk had stopped there once when he was squiring for the old man. Sir Arlen said they brewed a fine brown ale. Might be we could have a taste while we waited for the ferry." Egg gave him a hopeful look.
"To wash the food down, sir?"
"What food would that be?"
"A slice off the roast," the boy said. "A bit of duck? A bowl of stew? Whatever they have, sir."
Their last hot meal had been 3 days ago. Since then they had been living on windfalls and strips of old salt beef as hard as wood. "It would be good to put some real food in our bellies before we started north. That wall's a long way off."
"We could spend the night as well," suggested Egg.
"Does my lord want a feather bed?"
"Straw will serve me well enough, sir," said Egg, offended.
"We have no coin for beds."
"We have 22 pennies, 3 stars, 1 stag, and that old chipped garnet, sir."
Dunk scratched at his ear. "I thought we had 2 silvers.
"Well, we did, till you bought the tent. Now we have the one. We won't have any if we start sleeping at inns. You want to share a bed with some peddler and wake up with his fleas?"
Dunk snorted.
"Not me. I have my own fleas, and they are not fond of strangers. We'll sleep beneath the stars."
"The stars are good," Egg allowed. "But the ground is hard, sir, and sometimes it's nice to have a pillow for your head."
"Pillows are for princes."
Egg was as good a squire as a knight could want, but every so often he would get to feeling princely. "The lad has dragon blood, never forget."
Dunk had beggar's blood himself, or so they used to tell him back in Flea Bottom, when they weren't telling him that he was sure to hang. "Might be we can afford some ale and a hot supper, but I'm not wasting good coin on a bed. We need to save our pennies for the ferryman."
The last time he had crossed the lake, the ferry only cost a few coppers, but that had been 6 years ago, or maybe 7. Everything had grown more costly since then.
"Well," said Egg, "we could use my boot to get across."
"We could," said Dunk,
But we won't. Using the boot was dangerous. Word would spread. Word always spreads. His squire was not bald by chance. Egg had the purple eyes of old Valyria, and hair that shone like beaten gold and strands of silver woven together. He'd as well wear a three-headed dragon as a brooch as let that hair grow out. These were perilous times in Westeros, and, well, it was best to take no chances. Another word about your bloody boot, and I'll clout you in the ear so hard you'll fly across the lake. I'd sooner swim, sir. Egg swam well, and Dunk did not. The boy turned in the saddle. Sir, someone's coming up the road behind us. Hear the horses? I'm not deaf. Dunk could see their dust as well. A large party, and in haste. Do you think they might be outlaws, sir? Egg rose in the stirrups, more eager than afraid. The boy was like that. Outlaws will be quieter. Only lords make so much noise. Dunk rattled his sword hilt to loosen the blade in its scabbard. Still, we'll get off the road and let them pass. There are lords and lords.
It never hurt to be a little wary. The roads were not as safe as when good King Daeron sat the Iron Throne. He and Egg concealed themselves behind a thorn bush. Dunk unslung his shield and slipped it onto his arm. It was an old thing, tall and heavy, kite-shaped, made of pine and rimmed with iron. He had bought it in Stony Sept to replace the shield the Longinch had hacked to splinters when they fought. Dunk had not had time to have it painted with his elm and shooting star, so it still bore the arms of its last owner, a hanged man swinging grim and grey beneath a gallows tree. It was not a sigil that he would have chosen for himself, but the shield had come cheap. The first riders galloped past within moments, two young lordlings mounted on a pair of coursers. The one in the bay wore an open-faced helm of gilded steel with three tall feathered plumes, one white, one red, one gold. Matching plumes adorned his horse's crinet. The black stallion beside him was barded in blue and gold. His trappings rippled with the wind of his passage as he thundered past. Side by side, the riders streaked on by, whooping and laughing, their long cloaks streaming behind. A third lord followed more sedately, at the head of a long column. There were two dozen in the party, grooms and cooks and serving men, all to attend three knights, plus men-at-arms and mounted crossbowmen, and a dozen drays heavy laden with their armor, tents, and provisions. Slung from the lord's saddle was his shield, dark orange and charged with three black castles. Dunk knew those arms, but from where? The lord who bore them was an older man, sour-mouthed and saturnine, with a close-cropped salt-and-pepper beard. He might have been at Ashford Meadow, Dunk thought. Or maybe we served at his castle when I was squiring for Sir Arlen? The old hedge knight had done service at so many different keeps and castles through the years that Dunk could not recall the half of them. The lord reined up abruptly, scowling at the thorn bush.
You! In the bush! Show yourself!
Behind him, two crossbowmen slipped quarrels into the notch. The rest continued on their way. Dunk stepped through the tall grass, his shield upon his arm, his right hand resting on the pommel of his longsword. His face was a red-brown mask from the dust the horses had kicked up, and he was naked from the waist up. He looked a scruffy sight, he knew, though it was like to be the size of him that gave the other pause.
"We want no quarrel, my lord. There's only the two of us, me and my squire."
He beckoned Egg forward.
"Squire, do you claim to be a knight?"
Dunk did not like the way the man was looking at him. Those eyes could flay a man. It seemed prudent to remove his hand from his sword.
"I'm a hedge knight, seeking service. Every robber knight I've ever hanged has said the same. Your device may be prophetic, sir, if sir you are, a gallows and a hanged man. These are your arms?"
"No, my lord, I need to have the shield repainted."
"Why? Did you rob it off a corpse?"
"I bought it, for good coin." Three castles, black on orange. Where have I seen those before?
"I am no robber."
The lord's eyes were chips of flint.
"How did you come by that scar upon your cheek? A cut from a whip?"
"A dagger. Though my face is none of your concern, my lord."
"I'll be the judge of what is my concern."
By then the two younger knights had come trotting back to see what had delayed their party.
"There you are, Gormy," called the rider on the black,
a young man, lean and lithe, with a comely, clean-shaven face and fine features. Black hair fell shining to his collar. His doublet was made of dark blue silk edged in gold satin. Across his chest, an engrailed cross had been embroidered in gold thread, with a golden fiddle in the first and third quarters, a golden sword in the second and the fourth. His eyes caught the deep blue of his doublet and sparkled with amusement. "Alan feared you'd fallen from your horse. A palpable excuse, it seems to me. I was about to leave him in my dust." "Who are these two brigands?" asked the rider on the bay. Egg bristled at the insult. "You have no call to name us brigands, my lord. When we saw your dust, we thought you might be outlaws. That's the only reason that we hid. This is Sir Duncan the Tall, and I'm his squire."
The lordlings paid no more heed to that than they would have paid the croaking of a frog.
"I believe that is the largest lout that I have ever seen," declared the knight of three feathers. He had a pudgy face beneath a head of curly hair, the colour of dark honey. 7 feet if he's an inch, I'd wager. What a mighty crash he'll make when he comes tumbling down."
Dunk felt colour rising to his face. "You'd lose your wager," he thought. The last time he'd been measured, Egg's brother Eamon pronounced him an inch shy of 7 feet.
"Is that your war horse, Sir Giant?" said the feathered lordling. "I suppose we could butcher it for the meat."
"Lord Alan oft forgets his courtesies," the black-haired knight said. "Please forgive his churlish words, sir. Alan, you will ask Sir Duncan for his pardon."
"If I must, will you forgive me, sir?"
He did not wait for reply, but turned his bay about and trotted down the road. The other lingered. "Are you bound for the wedding, sir?" Something in his tone made Dunk want to tug his forelock. He resisted the impulse and said,
"We've fought a ferry, my lord."
"As are we. But the only lords hereabouts are Gormley and that wastrel who just left us, Alan Cockshaw. I am a vagabond hedge knight like yourself. Sir John the Fiddler, I am called." That was the sort of name a hedge knight might choose, but Dunk had never seen any hedge knight garbed or armed or mounted in such splendour. "The Knight of the Golden Hedge," he thought.
"You know my name. My squire is called Egg." "Well met, sir. Come, ride with us to White Walls and break a few lances to help Lord Butterwell celebrate his new marriage. I'll wager you could give a good account of yourself."
Dunk had not done any jousting since Ashford Meadow. "If I could win a few ransoms, we'd eat well on the ride north," he thought. But the lord with the three castles on his shield said,
"Sir Duncan needs to be about his journey, as do we."
John the Fiddler paid the older man no mind. "I would love to cross swords with you, sir. I've tried men of many lands and races, but never one your size. Was your father large as well?"
"I never knew my father, sir."
"I am sad to hear it. Mine own sire was taken from me too soon." The fiddler turned to the lord of the three castles.
"We should ask Sir Duncan to join our jolly company."
"We do not need his sort." Dunk was at a loss for words. Penniless hedge knights were not oft asked to ride with high-born lords. I would have more in common with their servants. Judging from the length of their column, Lord Cockshaw and the fiddler had brought grooms to tend their horses, cooks to feed them, squires to clean their armour, guards to defend them. Dunk had Egg.
"His sword?" the fiddler laughed. "What sword is that? The big sword? Look at the size of him. We want strong men. Young swords are worth more than old names, I've oft heard it said." "By fools! You know little and less about this man. He might be a brigand, or one of Lord Bloodraven's spies."
"I'm no man's spy," said Dunk, "and my lord has no call to speak of me as if I were deaf or dead or down in Dawn."
Those flinty eyes considered him.
"Down in Dawn would be a good place for you, sir. You have my leave to go there."
"Pay him no mind," the fiddler said. "He's a sour old soul. He suspects everyone. Gormley, I have a good feeling about this fellow.
Sir Duncan, will you come with us to White Walls?"
"My lord, I..."
How could he share a camp with such as these? Their serving men would raise their pavilions, their grooms would curry their horses, their cooks would serve them each a capon or a joint of beef, whilst Dunk and Egg gnawed on strips of hard salt beef.
"I couldn't."
"You see," said the lord of the three castles, "he knows his place, and it is not with us."
He turned his horse back toward the road.
By now, Lord Coxhaw is half a league ahead.
I suppose I must chase him down again. The fiddler gave Dunk an apologetic smile. Perchance we'll meet again some day. I hope so. I should love to try my lance on you.
Dunk did not know what to say to that.
Good fortune in the lists, sir, he finally managed. But by then Sir John had wheeled about to chase the column. The older lord rode after him. Dunk was glad to see his back. He had not liked his flinty eyes, nor Lord Alan's arrogance. The fiddler had been pleasant enough, but there was something odd about him as well.
Two fiddles and two swords, a cross engrailed, he said to Egg as they watched the dust of their departure.
What house is that?
None, sir. I never saw that shield in any roll of arms.
Perhaps he is a hedge knight after all.
Dunk had devised his own arms at Ashford Meadow when a puppeteer called Tanzel Tootall asked him what he wanted painted on his shield.
Was the older lord some kin to House Frey?
The Freys bore castles on their shields, and their holdings were not far from here. Egg rolled his eyes.
The Frey arms are two blue towers connected by a bridge on a grey field. Those were three castles, black on orange, sir. Did you see a bridge?
No. He does that just to annoy me.
And next time you roll your eyes at me, I'll clout you on the ear so hard they'll roll back into your head for good.
Egg looked chastened.
I never meant...
Never mind what you meant. Just tell me who he was.
Gorman Peak, the Lord of Starpike.
That's down in the Reach, isn't it? Does he really have three castles?
Only on his shield, sir. House Peak did hold three castles once, but two of them were lost.
How do you lose two castles?
You fight for the Black Dragon, sir.
Oh. Dunk felt stupid. That again.
For 200 years, the realm had been ruled by the descendants of Aegon the Conqueror and his sisters, who had made the Seven Kingdoms one and forged the Iron Throne. Their royal banners bore the three-headed dragon of House Targaryen, red on black. 16 years ago, a bastard son of King Aegon IV, named Daemon Blackfyre, had risen in revolt against his true-born brother. Daemon had used the three-headed dragon on his banners too, but he reversed the colours, as many bastards did. His revolt had ended on the Redgrass Field, where Daemon and his twin sons died beneath the rain of Lord Bloodraven's arrows. Those rebels who survived and bent the knee were pardoned, but some lost land, some titles, some gold. All gave hostages to ensure their future loyalty.
Three castles, black on orange.
I remember now, Sir Arlen never liked to talk about the Redgrass Field, but once in his cups he told me how his sister's son had died.
He could almost hear the old man's voice again, smell the wine upon his breath.
Roger of Pennytree, that was his name. His head was smashed in by a mace wielded by a lord with three castles on his shield.
Lord Gorman Peak. The old man never knew his name, or never wanted to.
By that time, Lord Peak and John the Fiddler and their party were no more than a plume of red dust in the distance.
It was 16 years ago. The Pretender died, and those who followed him were exiled or forgiven. Anyway, it has naught to do with me.
For a while they rode along without talking, listening to the plaintive cries of birds. Half a league on, Dunk cleared his throat and said,
"Butterwell," he said. "His lands are near?"
"On the far side of the lake, sir. Lord Butterwell was the master of coin when King Aegon sat the Iron Throne. King Daeron made him hand, but not for long. His arms are undy green and white and yellow, sir."
Egg loved showing off his heraldry.
"Is he a friend of your father?"
Egg made a face.
"My father never liked him. In the rebellion, Lord Butterwell's second son fought for the Pretender, and his eldest for the king. That way he was certain to be on the winning side. Lord Butterwell didn't fight for anyone."
"Some might call that prudent."
"My father calls it craven."
"Aye, you would."
Prince Maekar was a hard man, proud and full of scorn.
"We have to go by White Walls to reach the King's Road. Why not fill our bellies?"
Just the thought was enough to cause his guts to rumble.
"Might be that one of the wedding guests will need an escort back to his own seat."
"You said that we were going north."
"The wall has stood 8,000 years. It will last a while longer. It's 1,000 leagues from here to there, and we could do with some more silver in our purse."
Dunk was picturing himself atop Thunder,
riding down that sour-faced old lord with the three castles on his shield. That would be sweet. It was old Sir Arlen Squire who defeated you, I could tell him, when he came to ransom back his arms and armour. The boy who replaced the boy you killed. The old man would like that.
You're not thinking of entering the lists, are you, sir?
Might be it's time.
It's not, sir.
Maybe it's time I gave you a good clout in the ear.
I don't need to win two tilts. If I could collect two ransoms and pay out only one, we'd eat like kings for a year.
If there was a melee, I might enter that. Dunk's size and strength would serve him better in a melee than in the lists.
It's not customary to have a melee at a marriage, sir.
It's customary to have a feast, though. We have a long way to go. Why not set out with our bellies full for once?
The sun was low in the west by the time they saw the lake, its waters glimmering red and gold, bright as a sheet of beaten copper. When they glimpsed the turrets of the inn above some willows, Dunk donned his sweaty tunic once again and stopped to splash some water on his face. He washed off the dust of the road as best he could and ran wet fingers through his thick mop of sun-streaked hair. There was nothing to be done for his size or the scar that marked his cheek, but he wanted to make himself appear somewhat less the wild robber knight. The inn was bigger than he'd expected, a great grey sprawl of a place, timbered and turreted, half of it built on pilings out over the water. A road of rough-cut planks had been laid down over the muddy lakeshore to the ferry landing, but neither the ferry nor the ferrymen were in evidence. Across the road stood a stable with a thatched roof. A dry stone wall enclosed the yard, but the gate was open. Within, they found a well and a watering trough.
"See to the animals," Dunk told Egg, "but see that they don't drink too much. I'll ask about some food."
He found the innkeep sweeping off the steps.
"Are you come for the ferry?"
the woman asked him.
"You're too late. The sun's going down, and Ned don't like to cross by night unless the moon is full. He'll be back first thing in the morning."
"Do you know how much he asks?"
3 pennies for each of you, and 10 for your horses."
"We have 2 horses and a mule."
"There's 10 for mules as well."
Dunk did the sums in his head and came up with 6 and 30, more than he had hoped to spend.
"Last time I came this way, it was only 2 pennies and 6 for horses.
"Take that up with Ned. It's naught to me. If you're looking for a bed, I've none to offer. Lord Shawnee and Lord Costain brought their retinues. I'm full to bursting."
"Is Lord Peak here as well?" "He killed Sir Arlen Squire."
"He was with Lord Cockshaw and John the Fiddler?"
"Ned took him across on his last run."
She looked Dunk up and down.
"Were you part of their company?"
"We met them on the road, is all."
A good smell was drifting out of the windows of the inn, one that made Dunk's mouth water.
"We might like some of what you're roasting, if it's not too costly."
"It's wild boar,"
the woman said.
"Well peppered and served with onions, mushrooms and mashed neeps."
"We could do without the neeps. Some slices off the boar and a tankard of your good brown ale would do for us. How much would you ask for that? And maybe we could have a place on your stable floor to bed down for the night?"
That was a mistake.
"The stables are for horses. That's why we call them stables. You're big as a horse, I'll grant you, but I only see 2 legs.
She swept her broom at him to shoo him off.
"I can't be expected to feed all the 7 kingdoms. The boar is for my guests. So is my ale. I won't have Lord saying that I run short of food or drink before they will surfeit. The lake is full of fish, and you'll find some other rogues camped down by the stumps. Hedge knights, if you believe them."
Her tone made it quite clear that she did not.
"Might be they'd have food to share. It's naught to me. Away with you now. I've work to do."
The door closed with a solid thump behind her before Dunk could even think to ask where he might find these stumps. He found Egg sitting on the horse trough, soaking his feet in the water and fanning his face with his big floppy hat.
"Are they roasting pig, sir? I smell pork."
"Wild boar," said Dunk in a glum tone. "But who wants boar when we have good salt beef?" Egg made a face.
"Can I please eat my boots instead, sir? I'll make a new pair out of the salt beef. It's tougher."
"No," said Dunk, trying not to smile. "You can't eat your boots. One more word and you'll eat my fist, though. Get your feet out of that trough." He found his great helm on the mule and slung it underhand at Egg. "Draw some water from the well and soak the beef.
Unless you soaked it for a good long time, the salt beef was like to break your teeth. It tasted best when soaked in ale, but water would serve. Don't use a trough either. I don't care to taste your feet. My feet could only improve the taste, sir, Egg said, wriggling his toes. But he did as he was bid. The hedge knights did not prove hard to find. Egg spied their fire flickering in the woods along the lakeshore, so they made for it, leading their animals behind them. The boy carried Dunk's helm beneath one arm, sloshing with each step he took. By then the sun was a red memory in the west. Before long, the trees opened up, and they found themselves in what must once have been a weirwood grove. Only a ring of white stumps and a tangle of bone-pale roots remained to show where the trees had stood when the children of the forest ruled in Westeros. Amongst the weirwood stumps, they found two men squatting near a cookfire, passing a skin of wine from hand to hand. Their horses were cropping at the grass beyond the grove, and they had stacked their arms and armor in neat piles. A much younger man sat apart from the other two, his back against the chestnut tree.
"Well met, sirs,"
Dunk called out in a cheerful voice. It was never wise to take armed men unawares.
"I am called Sir Duncan, the tall. The lad is Egg. May we share your fire?"
A stout man of middling years rose to greet them, garbed in tattered finery. Flamboyant ginger whiskers framed his face.
"Well met, Sir Duncan. You are a large one, and most welcome, certainly, as is your lad. Egg, was it? What sort of name is that, pray?"
"A short one, sir." Egg knew better than to admit that Egg was short for Aegon, not to men he did not know.
"Indeed? What happened to your hair?"
"Rootworms," Dunk thought. "Tell him it was rootworms, boy." That was the safest story, the tale they told most often, though sometimes Egg took it in his head to play some childish game.
"I shaved it off, sir. I mean to stay shaven until I earn my spurs." "A noble vow. I am Sir Kyle, the Cat of Misty Moor. Under yonder chestnut sits Sir Glendon, Ball, and here you have the good Sir Maynard Plum."
Egg's ears pricked up at that name.
"Plum, are you kin to Lord Viserys Plum, sir?"
"Distantly," confessed Sir Maynard, a tall, thin, stoop-shouldered man with long, straight, flaxen hair, though I doubt that his lordship would admit to it. "One might say that he is of the sweet plums, whilst I am of the sour." Plum's cloak was as purple as his name, though frayed about the edges and badly dyed. A moonstone brooch, big as a hen's egg, fastened it at the shoulder. Elsewise he wore dun-coloured roughspun and stained brown leather.
"We have salt beef," said Dunk. "Sir Maynard has a bag of apples," said Kyle the cat. "And I have pickled eggs and onions. Why, together we have the makings of a feast. Be seated, sir. We have a fine choice of stumps for your comfort. We will be here until mid-morning, unless I miss my guess. There is only the one ferry, and it is not big enough to take us all. The lords and their tails must cross first."
"Help me with the horses," Dunk told Egg. Together, the two of them unsaddled Thunder, Rain, and Maester. Only when the animals had been fed and watered and hobbled for the night did Dunk accept the wineskin that Sir Maynard offered him.
"Even sour wine is better than none," said Kyle the cat. "We'll drink finer vintages at White Walls. Lord Butterwell is said to have the best wines north of the Arbor. He was once the king's hand, as his father's father was before him, and he is said to be a pious man besides, and very rich."
"His wealth is all from cows," said Maynard Plum. "He ought to take a swollen udder for his arms. These Butterwells have milk running in their veins, and the Freys are no better. This will be a marriage of kettle thieves and toll collectors, one lot of coin clinkers joining with another. When the Black Dragon rose, this Lord of Cows sent one son to Daemon and one to Daeron to make certain there was a Butterwell on the winning side. Both perished on the red grass field, and his youngest died in the spring. That's why he's making this new marriage. Unless this new wife gives him a son, Butterwell's name will die with him."
"As it should."
Sir Glendon Ball gave his sword another stroke with the whetstone. "The warrior hates cravens." The scorn in his voice made Dunk give the youth a closer look. Sir Glendon's clothes were of good cloth, but well-worn and ill-matched, with a look of hand-me-downs. Tufts of dark brown hair stuck out from beneath his iron half-helm. The lad himself was short and chunky, with small, close-set eyes, thick shoulders, and muscular arms. His eyebrows were shaggy as two caterpillars after a wet spring, his nose bulbous, his chin pugnacious.